What's up? It's 101 with Joe O'Donnell, episode 4, coming your way on all of your podcast platforms. Appreciate all the support so far. Encourage you to go back and check out the previous episodes. Minnesota Wild goaltender Alex Stalock, my first ever guest. Episode 2 was Tampa Bay Lightning assistant coach Derek Lalonde, former Iowa Wild bench boss. And the previous episode, Curtis Gabriel, now with the Philadelphia Flyers organization, but a longtime member of the Minnesota and Iowa Wild. Great conversations with all, and really looking forward to episode 4 today, where in a few minutes I'll bring you my conversation with new Minnesota Wild assistant coach Brett McLean, who spent the last 3 seasons with the Iowa Wild as an assistant coach. Great conversation about hockey, his travels as a player, his role as a coach, growing and developing as a coach in 3 years here in Iowa, some stuff about his family and time in British Columbia, and another interesting tidbit that, you know, I've known Coach Mack for 3 years now. I don't think I realize he is not on social media at all. So we'll talk with him about that coming up in a couple of minutes here on 101 with Joe O'Donnell. And a lot to get into before we get to our conversation with Coach McLean, including some news from the Minnesota Wild organization that shook down yesterday, sort of late afternoon, early evening, caught a lot of people by surprise, and that was the trade of Eric Staal. Minnesota moving Eric Staal, the 3-time 40-goal scorer, to the Buffalo Sabres in a 1-for-1 trade. Marcus Johansson coming back the way of Minnesota. Staal, 35-year-old centerman. A ton of experience, a Stanley Cup from his days in Carolina back in 2006. Great guy in the locker room in Minnesota. A leader on this team for a long time. Everybody had talked to about Eric Staal mentions that he's just a consummate professional, and the little bit of dealings I had with Eric as he came to that preseason game when Minnesota played St. Louis a couple years back at Wells Fargo Arena. I got a chance to interview him for that, and my little stint in the NHL last year, just kind of being around him, you get that vibe. Good guy, leader, well-respected, and obviously a heck of a career. On the flip side, Minnesota gets Marcus Johansson. They get a little bit younger. The cap hit almost a wash. Minnesota will have a little bit more salary to retain acquiring Johansson as opposed to Staal. Both players entering the final year of their deal whenever the 2021 season gets going. But as far as Johansson goes, 29 years of age, had 30 points in 60 games in his only year with Buffalo last year. He's got a ton of playoff experience. He's a former first-round draft pick selected by Washington back in 2009. He's got almost 700 NHL games between 4 teams just in the regular season and almost another 100 games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Again, getting a little bit younger, acquiring Johansson, obviously adding a little bit more speed, I think you could say, without hesitation, in bringing Johansson to the fold. He's a bit more of a playmaker, but he can play the power play. Minnesota, at least it sounds like off the hop, intends to possibly use him as a center iceman. He's played both center and wing in his career, so a little versatility there. And maybe a guy looking for a fresh start. And so I think it's a good move by Minnesota. Bill Guerin emphasizing the fact that there's opportunity for Johansson coming to Minnesota to play some big minutes. He also hinted at the fact that the Wild need to shake some things up. The core that has been with Minnesota now for a number of years has not accomplished the goal that they'd like to accomplish in the postseason. And so you can't keep running it back, I guess, is what Bill Guerin is looking at. Again, it's really his first chance to put his stamp on this team with a full offseason. And we've seen him make a couple of moves now. So the trade yesterday, Marcus Johansson for Eric Staal. Overall, I like it. Again, Eric Staal, a great player. He's had a great career. Marcus Johansson has also had an outstanding career. He comes to Minnesota with 1 year left on his contract, and we'll see with some increased ice time and knowing head coach Dean Evason from his days with the Capitals, what type of player he can be in Minnesota remains to be seen, but I certainly like the move. And again, as Bill Guerin alluded to, sort of looking to shake things up a bit, and he's certainly doing that because by all accounts, it looks like Mikko Koivu has played his last game in a Minnesota Wild sweater, which is crazy to think that, you know, sort of that chapter turning as Koivu's been with the organization longer than anyone. And then some other moves, too, earlier this week, or I guess about a week ago now, with Nick Bjugstad coming over in a trade from the Pittsburgh Penguins as Minnesota acquires Bjugstad in exchange for a conditional draft pick. So that's a new player added to the fold, a guy looking to bounce back from some injury-plagued seasons. That trade came on September 11th in exchange for a 2021 conditional pick. Bukestad, a big center iceman. Minnesota boy, again, looking to sort of reinvent himself in a lot of ways. He's healthy by all accounts, and we'll see how he factors into the depth chart, but certainly slots in as one of the center icemen for Minnesota in this upcoming season. So you got the Stahl trade, acquiring Johansson. You bring in Nick Bukestad for a conditional draft pick. And then the other big news is that Jonas Brodin is going nowhere, signing a 7-year contract extension, an average annual value of $6 million a year, which I think is fair for both sides. One of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL. The numbers offensively really haven't been there as much as I might have expected from a kid like Brodin, having seen him a touch in the minors and having seen him really flourish at the NHL level, but he's just 27 years of age, Brodin. 10th overall pick in 2011. He's played more than 600 games between the regular season and the playoffs, all with Minnesota. I've heard Chuck Fletcher, you know, the one-time GM of Minnesota, now with the Philadelphia Flyers, absolutely rave about Brodin from a just all-around skill standpoint and an impact on the game standpoint, having, you know, conversations over the years, just kind of shooting the you-know-what and being around the hockey brass. And Fletcher's the guy that drafted him, but just, you know, absolutely in love with Brodin, and this was a handful of years ago. Got to see him a little bit in the American Hockey League during that lockout in 2011-2012 firsthand, and just watching him make unbelievable plays at the AHL level. That was a fun year in the AHL because in Houston at the time with the Arrows, you had Mikael Granlund, Jonas Brodin, Jason Zucker, Charlie Coyle, Johan Larson, all in Houston, you know, playing on behalf of Minnesota because the NHL had that partial season lockout. And then you look to Edmonton's farm team at the time was in Oklahoma City, and the Barons had Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle, Justin Schultz, Mark Arcabello, and the Arrows and Barons were playing like 8 times, you know, in the first half of that year, 6 times, whatever it was, and those games were unbelievable talent-wise in the AHL, and Brodin stood out, you know, just like any of those other names, just like any first-rounder of his caliber you would expect to. Just smooth plays with the puck, you know, just amazing ability to think the game, his skating stride, and, you know, again, that's 2011. You know, he's a rookie at that point, basically, and looking to get into the NHL as soon as the lockout ended. So to see how far he's come in his career, still be widely regarded as one of the league's top defensive defensemen, but great skating ability, IQ, well-liked in the locker room, you know, from everything I understand, a good leader as well. So great to see Jonas Brodin get rewarded for that with a 7-year contract extension. But just knowing how people around the league feel about him, the former Minnesota GM and Chuck Fletcher, like I talked about, obviously Bill Guerin values the heck out of what Brodin brings to the table. And when he signed the contract, you can read Guerin's quotes or listen to the media interviews, just raving about his ability. The analytics back it up. It's so nice to see Jonas Brodin, a left-shot defenseman, sticking around the organization for the foreseeable future. And by a you know, all indications, really probably going to finish his career with the Minnesota Wild. So that's great to see. On the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs front, boy, we are getting closer to the Stanley Cup final. We know this much, that Dallas Stars have advanced, and they are going to participate in their first Cup final since 2000. Of course, Dallas won it all in 99. Bill Guerin knows a thing or two about that team and those great Stars teams. But boy, Dallas, I got to say, I'm surprised. I thought Colorado or Vegas were essentially shoo-ins to come out of the West for a long time. And Dallas took care of both of them. And they did so, I don't want to say with relative ease, but the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights were ousted by anybody in 5 games was maybe as shocking to me as anything else that's happened in the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs. So congrats to Dallas in that regard. They have earned it. Anton Khudobin has been outstanding. Speaking of the Houston Arrows, a former Minnesota Wild goaltender in Khudobin. And Dallas never seems to get rattled. They play hard for Rick Bonus, Todd Nelson, John Stevens, 2 coaches on his bench that are well-respected, that are players' coaches. John Stevens has won Stanley Cups with the LA Kings. Rick Bonus has been around but seems to be very well-liked. And Derek Laxdal, the assistant coach that came up during the season. Remember, Jim Montgomery started the year as the Stars coach. He was fired. Bonus took over. Then they promoted Derek Laxtal from the Texas Stars to go up and be an assistant. And a lot of the guys that are contributing right now for Dallas played significant minutes in the AHL with the Texas Stars over the last couple of years under Derek Laxtal's watch. So I think there's that familiarity there and a little trust with having Derek Laxtal on the bench as well for some of those young Stars players. And to that point, six of the top 10 Dallas scorers so far in the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs have spent significant time at some point in their careers in the American Hockey League. You look at Miro Heiskanen, who hockey fans got to see for the first time, the former, was the fourth overall pick a couple years back at the Traverse City Prospects Tournament in Traverse City, Michigan. Then he spent time in the AHL. Denis Gurianov had a hat trick at Wells Fargo Arena earlier this season. So Wild fans at the AHL level having a chance to see him a lot. John Klingberg spent time in the AHL. Roope Hintz, a bunch of years with Texas. Foxa, another guy that spent time in the AHL, and I believe he was on that Stars 2014 Calder Cup team at the AHL level. Jamie Oleksiak, another guy that cut his teeth in the AHL. Joel Kiviranta, Wild fans saw him this year and last year, and he's got 4 goals in just 8 games for Dallas in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So they're getting a lot of contributions from young players. And one of the things we'll talk about with Minnesota Wild assistant coach Brent McLean here in a couple of minutes on episode 4 of One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell is about the youth and just how well some of these young players and AHL alumni are participating and performing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So that's in the West. Dallas has moved on. Pains me to ever congratulate Dallas on anything, being from Philadelphia, hating the Cowboys. Has nothing to do with the Stars, really, but, you know, it's just Dallas. So it's hard for me to really get too worked up and excited for the Dallas Stars on a personal level. In the East, Tampa has a 3-2 series lead. The health of Braden Point, certainly a big storyline right now in that series. The Islanders winning in double overtime to force a Game 6, which will be later tonight. I originally thought the Islanders would win this series in 7. They manhandled my hometown Flyers for the most part in what turned out to be a 7-game series, but the Islanders were clearly the better team, and they just looked like they sort of had that mojo, looked like they sort of had that feel about them, that swagger and confidence. They can come at you in waves. They defend very well. Good power play, some skill with Barzal and Beauvillier, et cetera, Bailey and Nelson. So they sort of have it all. And that's why I thought the Islanders, you know, were sort of a team of destiny. Tampa took a commanding lead in the series. Again, the Isles force a Game 6, which will be later tonight, in the health of Braden Point. A huge storyline in that series, not only in Game 6 tonight, but if there is a Game 7 as well. All right, quick timeout, quick message from Anchor.fm, our host platform here for One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. Then we'll chat with Minnesota Wild assistant coach Brent McLean. My guest today on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell is the new assistant coach of the Minnesota Wild, Brent McLean. Coach Mack, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Probably could have just driven down the street and done this in person, but you know, we'll socially distance and do this podcast. Hired August 26 by Minnesota after 3 years with the Iowa Wild as an assistant coach, a long playing career, time overseas, almost 400 games in the NHL. But how did this job come about? Obviously, being within the organization certainly helps, but how did you sort of get word that Minnesota, Dean Evason, Bill Guerin, the staff there, were interested in bringing you on board?
Well, I, like everyone else, intently watched the NHL return to play in the playoffs, and it was just outstanding to watch. I was like my 8-year-old son watching the games yeah. again. I'm so excited just to have hockey on in the summer, and obviously intently watched the Canucks Wilds qualification series. And then when the Wild unfortunately lost out a couple days after that, I think I read an article that they were looking for another assistant coach, and I kind of said to myself, I wonder which way they're going to go with that. And interestingly, about 3 to 4 hours later, got a text message from Dean Evason asking me to give him a call. And I called them, obviously, and we spoke for a few minutes, and I was pretty excited that he asked me to join his staff after it sounded like he had talked to many people in the Iowa and Minnesota organizations and got a little bit of a background on me. So it was a pretty exciting moment for myself and my family.
Were you impressed that Michael Russo from The Athletic did not have the breaking news?
Well, unfortunately, I am not on social media. And even though I have read plenty of Michael Russo's articles and I very much like what he does, I wouldn't have even known that. Yeah. Joe. So
you don't go on Twitter at all. You don't even have like a
I do not go on Twitter at all.
No burner account where you just check in to see what other people are tweeting about?
No, nothing. My wife has, I don't think she has Twitter, but she has Facebook and those a few other social media outlets. So once in a while, if something breaking happens, she'll tell me. So I guess that's my access to social media would be my wife's account, but it's certainly not a burner account. It is hers. On the up and
hang
up.
On, we got to go down this path for a second. So have you, I don't think I knew that you didn't have Twitter. I just assumed you did. Not that you have to actively tweet, but you can at least follow along. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of coaches and GMs that just have an account with the little egg avatar and it's some random name. And they just at least can follow the Bob McKenzie's of the world or the Michael Russo's and get their scoops, as we like to say. Have you, how close have you come to sort of caving and getting an account so you can at least stay timely on news, not even sports-wise, but across the world?
Well, interesting you ask, because when I first got into coaching a few years ago, I was thinking of doing that. I was like on Twitter about to sign up, and just for that reason, just to get the news. And then I was like, no. Then I just totally reversed course and didn't do it. And then I met you, and now you're my – you're my resource. Yeah. You're my scoop.
Well, you're going to have to get a new guy when you head up to Minnesota.
Oh, I need. There you go. Well, I hope, I hope our friendship can remain intact, Joe. Well, I mean, I have no plans on not staying in close contact with you.
Yeah. That sounds good to me. We'll see once you officially become an NHLer again. We'll see how that plays out. If you remember us minor league,
maybe try to call me in about a year, and then we'll see.
Exactly.
See where we're
Joe
at.
Who? How would you sum up your time in Iowa?
It's been just a blast these last 3 years. Incredible amount of learning for myself, going from playing to coaching. Feel just so fortunate. Just to start with, the people of Iowa and the Des Moines area, just first class, and the organization, Iowa Wild, off the ice, on the ice, the coaching staffs, the business staffs, the Minnesota Wild organization. And a huge part of it is to the players. We had an unbelievable group of young men to work with. It's really been a wonderful experience for my family and I these 3 years, and we have just so many fond memories of it.
You were able to work with the defense. You were able to work with the forwards, both specialty teams units in your 3 seasons. Why was that important for you to sort of touch all the bases at a coaching level?
Well, the first 2 years, as you mentioned, I was primarily with the forwards and doing the penalty kill unit. And then you just don't know when opportunity is going to come. And it just so happened that the power play and defensive coaching responsibilities opened up for my last season. And it just seemed like a natural progression. It's not necessarily how fast you do things or how quick you climb, but I do really believe in growth, and it's something that's important to me to be challenged each and every year. And I remember my first year coaching, I was very much challenged in every single way. And I definitely, it's one thing that became a priority to me was that I wanted to always have that feeling of growth and to really almost kind of be on the edge, like, can I handle this responsibility? So I really, really enjoyed that aspect of switching specifically to the coaching the defense for 40 years. I played forward and thought like a forward, and now to transition to thinking like a defenseman was a steep learning curve. And I'm just very thankful that Tom Curvers and Tim Army gave me that opportunity that I could make that transition.
After you finished up playing in the NHL, you spent a number of years overseas. And then when you retired, you jumped right into coaching. What was the biggest challenge for you?
There are many challenges. I would say that the biggest challenge for me was probably not trying to get ahead of myself or trying to organize the things that I'd learned and the experiences that I had as a player, and to just remember that it was my first year coaching. And even though, again, there was a lot of experiences that I'd been through as a player, that now to kind of organize those thoughts and to be able to translate those as a coach now and to try to make sure that the players understood, I think it was important for me to really listen to the other coaches. And again, very, very lucky that Derek Lalonde hired me, and I was working with a very experienced other assistant coach and David Cuniff and Keith Paulson, our video coach on staff, and Freddie Chabot, the goalie coach, that these guys had a ton of experience. And so for me, the big challenge was just make sure you listen to these guys and really learn what you can so that you're helping the staff as much as possible.
After 3 years now in the coaching ranks, how would you describe yourself? If a Minnesota Wild fan is listening to this and they want to know, what do we get our new assistant coach? How would you describe your coaching style?
Well, I would say very passionate. I absolutely love coaching. I've said this to many people. I'm sure I've said it to you, Joe, that I feel like my playing career was just my education, and that was just my preparation to be a coach. I feel like my role in hockey is more to be a coach than it was to be a player. And so because of that, I absolutely love the game. I have a huge passion for the game. I'm excited to be at the rink every single day. But I also think that one thing that I do bring is I do have a good connection with the players. Part of that maybe because I was just recently a player 3 years ago. But I do feel that I do have the ability to connect with the player and hold the player accountable and even have some of those stern talks with the player, but still keep a very strong personal relationship with that player and try to help them get the most out of their abilities and try to help the team the most they can.
Who was Brett McLean as a player?
Brett McLean as a player was, I was definitely a 200-foot player. I was maybe a jack of all and a master of none as a player. I was good offensively. I was solid defensively. I was good on faceoff. I played a lot of center. I was decent on the wall. Didn't have a ton of speed. I could see the game pretty well. But it's interesting. I had one of my coaches in the minor leagues, I was playing in Cleveland and Houston. Todd McClellan was my head coach, and he had a conversation with me when I was a young professional playing in the minors. And he said, at the level you're at right at the time I was in the American Hockey League, he said, you're going to be the same player whichever level you're playing at, whether you're in the NHL, whether in the East Coast Hockey League, whether you're playing in Europe. And at the time, I'd really wanted to kind of push up into the first line and get kind of the big minutes and the big power play minutes at the time. And I actually took it kind of as a slight at the time, what he was saying. And as I grew older, I realized that it was actually a compliment, and it was true. He was bang on. I was never the top scorer in any league I was in, but yet I was a pretty decent player and contributed offensively, including in the National Hockey League. I was pretty much the same player in the NHL as I was in the AHL. And what he was saying was that my game was pretty well-rounded and it was going to translate to the higher levels, but to not expect myself to light any league on fire on my way to getting there.
Talk about your European experience, the seasons overseas, Switzerland. I mean, I don't want to say you bounced around, but you got experience in a lot of different countries and cultures. And how did that help shape you?
Well, it's just massive. And now, as a coach, to go back to a couple questions ago, that's another area in that I've experienced so many different cultures and coaches and the way the game is played. And sometimes in North America, we get in a little bit of a bubble that this is how the game is played. And in Sweden, in Switzerland, they look at the game entirely differently. And I think that really benefits myself. And it also helps me to relate to players when they come over from Switzerland or they come over from Sweden. I've experienced what it's like playing over there. And I've experienced being the only countryman or only Canadian in a locker room. So I know what it feels like for them when they come over, and maybe they're the only person from their country in a locker room. So I can help to relate to that. But those years were fantastic. It was definitely went through the culture shock the first year. I went to Bern, Switzerland after playing in Florida. So that was different. Wow. You're going from a nice big house in Florida to a smaller apartment in Switzerland, obviously a beautiful country, an amazing city. But the hockey is great. And again, things are just done differently. And I really am thankful for those experiences. I'm as proud of my years in Switzerland and in Austria as I am of my years playing in the National Hockey League, because there are challenges that come with playing over there. It's different. You don't get treated as far as the training staffs and the athletic therapists and the equipment managers that you do over here. You definitely have to adjust to a different way of the way they treat their players. So it is a challenge, but when you do adjust, it's an unbelievable experience. Most leagues are about 50 games a season with very little travel. So you're at home with your family each and every night. There's lots of practice time, so you can really work on your game. It's just a great lifestyle, and there's really no better opportunity to see the world and to see some really beautiful countries and to play hockey in Europe. So very fortunate for those 8 years that my family and I got to spend over there.
Chatting here with Brett McLean, new Minnesota Wild assistant coach. This is One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell and all of your podcast platforms. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all that sort of stuff that you can do to keep the podcast coming your way. Mac, you mentioned Tom McClellan a couple minutes ago. Who are some other coaches you played for that you really took something from?
Well, definitely Todd was one of them. Fortunate to play for him for 2 years. And he just very direct and honest. And that doesn't mean that he was always telling you what you wanted to hear. He would let me and any other player know, but he just had a way about him that you definitely respected him, because you knew that he had your best interest and the team best interest at heart. Joel Quenneville, another coach that I played for 2 years in Colorado, and very similar to Todd in that respect. Joel, just he really had a knack to kind of move people around the lineup and get the most out of him. I know for myself, both years I played for him, I was on the fourth line to start the season, and I ended the year on the second line. And there'd be kind of mid-season, there'd be a two-week period where I'd be thinking to myself, man, I'm playing really well here. I hope this gets noticed. And then all of a sudden, 2-3 weeks later, I'd show up at practice and I'd be moved up the lineup. He just really had a way to kind of get the most out of each player. So those were definitely two names that jump out at me. Another one was that I had in junior was Peter Anholt. He coached me for the Kelowna Rockets in the Western Hockey League. He's now the general manager of the Lethbridge Hurricanes, I believe, in the Western Hockey League. And Peter just, again, I guess I'm sticking with a theme here. He was very, very honest. And I guess that's something I hold important in coaching too. And Pete just, he really challenged me as a junior player and as a young man to kind of step up and to not just be a good player at the junior level, but to be a great player, and definitely had a big role in myself moving on to the professional ranks.
Share what you can about your potential role with Minnesota, whenever the season does resume the 2021 campaign.
One thing really, really fun and interesting about Dean Evason's staff, and he makes this clear to us and on the first phone call he had with myself, is he's big on collaboration, and everyone is going to have a voice and work together. And it's not one coach's power play or one coach's penalty kill. It's everyone is working together, but obviously within that, everyone does have their role, and my role, the initial thought would be I'd be working a lot with the wingers, helping out a lot with them, and also working on the power play with Dean, which I'm very much looking forward to learn from him and to work with all those great players that we can do that together. And I'll be starting as the eye in the sky up top for the first couple periods of the games and on a radio down to the bench and looking out for any type of structure or systems that maybe the team could do better or are doing very, very well. And then I'll come down to the bench for the third period. It sounds like that's going to be, that will be my role to start with. And as you can imagine, I couldn't be any more excited for this opportunity It's just going to be fantastic for my family and I.
Dean Evason is a guy that I got to know a little bit when he was coaching in Milwaukee. He spent 6 years with the Admirals, Nashville's farm team. I interviewed him a ton, and I always felt he was honest, always felt that he was very hard-nosed, but at the same time, just to the point. But at the same time, you know, the little bit I got to know him, even with Minnesota the last couple of years, fun to be around, those sorts of things. How would you describe Dean Evason from, again, kind of circling back to that whole honesty thing with the coach-player relationship?
Yeah, well, it's when I first met Dean 2 years ago at the Wilds training camp, I remember I was just a couple weeks later, I was talking with my wife, and she said, "Oh, how's the new assistant there in Minnesota, Dean Evason?" And I said to her, "He's one of the funnest people that I've ever met in hockey to be around. Like, he's just one of those people that when you're talking to him, when you're in a room with him, you just enjoy it. And there's always a playful banter, but kind of, as you said, there's always a, you know, a serious working undertone to it as well." So just another reason why I'm so excited for this new role. And Dean and I, actually, we spoke yesterday. We did a Zoom call, him and I, yesterday, just kind of bringing me up to speed on all the Minnesota Wild systems. It lasted about 2.5 hours. And I thought to myself at the very end of it, it seems like in speaking to him and all the systems, everything is simple. It is clear. And it's about playing hockey. And to explain that further, playing hockey means, you know, sometimes as coaches, you can really be on players like, "Hey, in this situation, do this." You can almost overcoach. And really, hockey's such an instinctual game that you need to just, for players and as coaches, our job is to, yes, put some ideas in their heads, but to just really let them go out and play hockey. So that's really one thing I got out of the conversation with Dean, and it was, that's exactly how I think the game should be played. You got to have simple concepts and simple structure. It's got to be clear. And at the end of the day, it's the players that are going out there and having success. So the players have to just go and play hockey at the end of the day. So I think that's probably a decent window into Dean.
What trends have you seen from the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs? Now the NHL's not only been back up and running, but done a great job with the respective bubbles. We're deep into the conference finals now. We know Dallas will be playing the winner of Tampa and New York Islanders. Has anything jumped out to you from what you've watched?
A few things jumped out at me early on in the playoffs, or the return to play. I noticed that a lot of goals from off angles were going in on the goalies, and that's definitely kind of gone away now. I'm not sure if possibly it was adjustments goalies made, or if it's just tightened up or what. But I noticed that, or maybe it was the offensive players were really shooting from all angles. So I definitely noticed that. Another thing, it seems like that one trend that I thought that's seemed to hold pretty true is a lot of the younger teams have definitely done well in the bubble. Yeah. And it's a bit of a theory. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't have any stats to back it up, but I feel like that when an older veteran team goes in the bubble, they've got a lot more they're leaving
yes. at
home with families, and they've got a lot more on their minds with children and all of that. The younger teams, they're going in, and really, this is great for them. I mean, they're just playing hockey and playing video games in their room, and that's probably what they're doing anyways most of the time during the regular season. So I feel like the younger teams have done very, very well, and the younger players have done very, very well. Again, I don't have any stats to kind of back that up, but it is a trend that I thought maybe kind of held true and seemed to be the case during this bubble.
You know, I was thinking over the course of the playoffs, sort of the same thing. I was wondering if you could find out, you know, looking at a matchup, which team has more wives and children and all that stuff and age, because, you know, like you said, it's a great sacrifice that these guys are making. And if you're 21 and you don't have a family, maybe it's a little bit easier for you. Put yourself as a player and leaving your family for 60 days, right? I mean, it would have to be a tough thing.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And I've actually done it. The way training camps work in Europe is they start usually around August 1st, and then the season starts first, second week of September. And we're from Western Canada. The most beautiful month is August. So my family always stayed back in Europe, in Canada for that month. So I was away from them for that month of August of all my time over in Europe. And it was long. It was hard to be away from them for training camp. So you want to be there and help out, but you've got to go and do your work. So what these players are going through is very, very difficult. And then to put on top of that they can't leave their restricted area, that would be another huge challenge for these players. And I think Rick Bowness, the Dallas coach, he's talked about it quite a bit, saying that nobody's complaining. We're all happy to play, but this is a challenge. There's a bubble psyche that it's very, very difficult. And obviously, Rick Bowness and Dallas have managed it extremely well to be where they are now.
You look across the NHL, so many players, younger players, like we've talked about, having great success. So many of them played against the Iowa Wild the last couple of years. Dallas is a prime example. Obviously, Nashville with players in Milwaukee. Zach Whitecloud had a big impact for Las Vegas. Saw him with the Chicago Wolves a lot. But just on Dallas for a moment, Gurianov, Kiviranta, Roope Hintz, goes on and on. I mean, a couple of years ago, they had Oleksiak and Klingberg, Heiskanen. What do you make of Dallas, their development, and just how good are some of these young players?
Yeah, well, it's interesting you bring up Dallas because, I mean, the conversation, I'm sure you're in on it too, but I remember talking with our coaching staff. It was probably my first year coaching, so 3 years ago, and we were saying that it was very clear that Dallas had made an organizational adjustment, or they have an organizational directive from bottom to the top that they wanted to get big, fast players. And you look at all those names you mentioned, that's who they are. You could put Janmark in
Yeah,
that category as
Dickinson.
well. Dickinson, they're all big, they're all fast. And we saw that in Texas, and they've given us fits my 3 years with Iowa. That's been our toughest place to win in, and by far in Austin, Texas. And so it's clear that they organizationally did that. And now, obviously, they're bearing the fruits of that. And all those players spent time in Texas, and all of them had success in Texas, and they've grown. And then you just see them now. They're just, and again, to the last question or last answer that I gave, and that these are all young players. They're excited to be in the bubble. They're excited to be where they are. They probably, I mean, I shouldn't speak because I don't know each of their personal situations, but they probably aren't leaving as much behind out of the bubble. And every one of them has just made a massive impact. Obviously, Gurianov scored that big goal, but Roope Hintz was just flying around in that third period of game five. And I believe he drew the penalty on Kiviranta's tying goal. It's pretty impressive to see what they've done. And obviously, the Dallas Stars, and they've done a great job in developing those players.
My family has gotten to know your family over the last 3 years, certainly. But tell Minnesota Wild fans, our listeners, a little bit about your family.
My wife Brenna, I'm lucky, very, very lucky that she's willing to continue this crazy hockey journey all over the world with me. That's the thing I'm most lucky to have in the in my life. So Brenna continues to support, and she's just amazing. We have a 13-year-old daughter, Darian, who's a wonderful dancer, does all forms of dance. So that's one of our tasks right now, looking for a new dance studio in Minnesota for her. Our son Nixon will turn 9 next month, and our other boy Nash will turn 5 next month. And so our other task is obviously finding them all schools, but and where we want to live, but to find those boys which hockey club that they would like to play for in Minnesota, and our youth hockey club. And we're gonna have lots of choices, that's for sure, because they're pretty excited to go up to the state of hockey. And obviously, they made a lot of great friends here in the Des Moines area. Most of all, your family, Joe, and they're definitely going to be sad to leave Iowa, but are excited for this next chapter. And the McLeans are professional movers. So this is kind of what we do, and getting to stay 3 years in one place seemed like almost a bit of a long stint, but going to be sad to leave Iowa for sure, but really excited to move up I-35 to Minnesota.
You're a British Columbia boy. You spend a lot of time back there when you can in the summers, a normal summer, especially. Tell our listeners about BNA Brewing.
BNA Brewing. It's a very exciting place. Obviously, like many restaurants, it's falling on challenging times now with COVID and what's happened in recent months, but it's still doing very, very well, all things considered. And it's just a wonderful restaurant that brews its own beer. It was started by my wife's brother, Kyle, and his wife, Carolyn, and they've just done an outstanding job. There's a bunch of us that are invested in it. A lot of family is invested in it, and we brew all different types of beer. We even package and sell it in liquor stores up in Western Canada, all of our different types of beer. And we have an outstanding chef and Justin Best, who just does a great job with all the food. It's about BNA. The restaurant is about 400 seats right now with the capacity restrictions. It's obviously not anywhere near that, but it's a big, beautiful 100-year-old building that used to be a tobacco packing plant. So it's got beautiful wooden floors and the raised ceilings and brick building, and it's got the exposed beams. It's got a bowling alley upstairs, an Airstream trailer upstairs acts as one of the bars. It's quite a fun place to be and get great beer and great food. So how's that for an advertisement, Joe?
I love it. The best BNA beer is what?
Would be called Don't Lose Your Dinosaur, which is an IPA. And is a reference, I know you got it, to Step Brothers, when the dad says to the two overgrown boys to don't forget your child within you, so don't lose your dinosaur. And it's great West Coast style IPA.
What was it like quarantining back this summer when you got back there? Way different, you know, than any other time. It was a legit 2 weeks where you guys are in your house, and you had told me when you hit the border, you got to tell them who's getting your groceries. But for our American listeners, that's odd. So what was it like?
Yeah. Canadian quarantine is definitely no joke. We experienced quarantine in March, as everyone else did when the pandemic first hit. But the one really unique thing about quarantine in Canada for us was that we were the only ones quarantining.
That's right.
So that was a real challenge. In March, everyone was. So there was nothing really going on. But for us, always when we go back to Kelowna, is where we in British Columbia, where we spend our summers, when we go back there, we're always visiting friends and family, and we're going. So it's such an exciting time. So we had those exciting feelings, but then we get there and we can't leave our property. And my in-laws live only a mile up the road in Kelowna, and all of our kids' cousins would be up there swimming and having fun, and our kids couldn't go and visit with them. So that was definitely very challenging, but we did our 2 weeks, and again, we made some good memories in that time too. It's amazing as a family, the fun you can have when there's nowhere else to be. And so for 2 weeks, we're lucky we've got a decent sized property and a pool up there as well. So we had plenty to do, and the weather was great, but it was certainly a challenge. And we got two or three phone calls from the Canadian government, just checking on us to making sure we were still there and asking us if we had any issues, but they're very strict with it. And the protocols that they put in place in Canada seem to have some positive effect. Their numbers have seemed to be holding at a pretty decent level as far as COVID is concerned.
You don't want to miss that phone call.
No, we don't want to miss that phone call, for sure. But it was interesting that they called asking for Nixon, if Nixon McLean was there. So they must kind of randomly do it,
right?
And they didn't actually look that he's 8 years old when they called. So, but no, it all worked out. But man, we were happy when that 2 weeks ended. I tell you, that was a fun day when we got out of it.
I got to ask you about your wife, Brenna. Her uncle is Chico Rash, former NHL goalie, and you guys have a great relationship with him. How would you describe Chico?
Well, Chico's the best. There's really no other way to say it. He has an energy about him, and he has an ability where when you have a conversation with him, you're the only person on the planet. Like, it is amazing how he can be so present to talk to everyone. It doesn't matter who he meets. It doesn't matter if it's his niece or his sister or his wife or somebody that he just met on the street. He is all in for every conversation. And just to give you a little bit of a window into Chico Rash, we actually just went up to see him on Labor Day. He's got a place in Emily, Minnesota, in northern Minnesota. So we just went up there and had a great weekend. He's got a tennis court there. So he put on his goalie pads and he played roller hockey with my boys for like 2.5 hours.
Awesome.
And what a memory for my boys to play. And Chico's, I believe he's in his 70s now. Like he's young at heart and he's got tons of energy, but that's 2.5 hours to play with a 4- and 8-year-old roller hockey. And he commentated the whole time. That was the best part. He commentated the entire time as if he was calling a New Jersey Devils game. Very special, special person. Very so lucky to know him and to be a part of his life. And he's a credit to the sport of hockey to have someone like Chico Rash involved.
Yeah, I should have known. Should have known not only a former NHL goalie, but as you mentioned, color commentator, long time for the New Jersey Devils and their television broadcast. Mac, just two more things for you, kind of off the radar here. Give me your favorite line mate of all time.
Wow, favorite line mate of all time. It's interesting, but the first one that just jumped in my mind was Alex Tanguay.
Wow.
So, there's talk about connections. That wasn't even set up, but I had 40 points my first year in Colorado, and I'm pretty sure Tang was involved in probably 37 of them. So, yeah.
All right, and this one might be a little more difficult. Give me a guy today playing in the NHL you'd love to play with.
Oh, wow. Love to play with. Guy in the NHL. Let me think. I'll just kind of talk it out here. I played center a lot, so I'm looking for a winger. Whack. I should go with a Wild player, but I'm not going to – we'll exclude the Wild, yeah. So I just don't get it. I'm going to go with David Pastrnak from Boston. All right. There's the guy. You can get a lot of assists playing with this guy, just giving him the puck and getting out of the way. The talent level he has is amazing. So I'm going to go with Pasta.
Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. For all you did for the Iowa Wild organization, the youth hockey scene here, the community stuff. I know you did a lot that people didn't see, and certainly we were glad to have you for 3 years in Iowa and looking forward to seeing how your career progresses with Minnesota once next season gets rolling around. Thanks again, Coach Mack.
Thanks for everything, Joe.
Just a great conversation there with Minnesota Wild assistant coach Brett McLean. Wish him and his family the best moving forward. Just a really good person, great personality around the rink every day. I'm sure the Minnesota Wild players will really take to his persona, his energy. And I think Minnesota, just from a coaching staff perspective, added a really good hockey mind and somebody with a great passion for the game. Someday, Brett McLean, folks, probably going to be an NHL head coach. Just seems to be trending in that direction. And I know it's on the radar of some other teams around the AHL as a possible head coach at the American Hockey League level prior to accepting that position with Minnesota. Again, my thanks to Coach McLean. A couple of things before we wrap up here. Again, always stay tuned to iowawild.com and all of our social media platforms for the latest happenings around the AHL and the Iowa Wild. Hope everybody's staying safe and healthy out there. As the kids have returned to school in Des Moines, and whether it's virtual or in the classroom, the youth sports are going on. It's starting to be fall season, it seems like. It'll be weird not to have hockey until at least December at the AHL level, but we will persevere, and looking forward to getting all of you back at Wells Fargo Arena, of course, whenever that time comes. Don't want to end on a sad sort of downer note, if you will, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the passing of Sam Annis's mom, Demi Annis, about 2 weeks ago today now. As Sam eloquently put it on Twitter, heaven gained another angel. And, you know, over 4 years, first of all, Sam Annis is salt of the earth, like one of the best kids you can meet, one of the best people to be around. His infectious smile and energy, forget an unbelievable hell of a hockey player, just from a person, you won't meet anybody better. Genuine, caring. And I've gotten the chance to know Demi and Sam's dad, Peter, over the 4 years. They came to a lot of road games. They would always come to Des Moines at least once or twice a season. And so you say hello, you know, you shake hands, you give a hug, those sorts of things. Brief conversations, maybe exchange an email or two, just stuff like that. But it's just, it's one of those things where you don't have to get to know somebody that well or that long to know they're a good person. Sort of that first impression type of thing. So on behalf of the organization, obviously, you know, it was crushing. And our condolences to the Sam Annis, you know, to the Annis family as they continue to grieve. Thoughts won't ever leave. You know, my thoughts for Sam and his family, they won't go away because, you know, time can't heal something like that. Demi battled breast cancer 4 times. You would never know it if you saw her, when you met her, if you just passed by her in the hallway. She was always smiling. She was always happy. She was always pleasant. And so just really devastating stuff for their family. You know, again, you don't spend that much time around somebody, but you get the sense for the type of person they are, how caring they are. And you can see what a great job that Demi and Peter did raising Sam and his sister Georgia. So just really, really tough. I just feel for the Annis family. But I wanted to mention that. Just terrible, terrible news. Just a fighter, a battler, a warrior. And again, my continued thoughts with the Annis family. Hope Sammy and his family and friends are hanging in there. I just can't imagine it gets much easier no matter how much time goes by. Again, didn't want to end on a downer, but had to mention it just because Demi was such a powerful person to be around and such an infectious personality. And just a really good mom. Lastly, the ALS walk, it's virtual, but it's coming up October the 3rd, 10 a.m. You can walk with me virtually, Iowa Wild Facebook page. Click on the live video. Please help the fight against ALS. Register for the Iowa Wild team and then join me Saturday, October 3rd, 10 a.m. virtually on the Iowa Wild Facebook page. Click on the live video link. Wear red. Share your photos and videos. Let us know who you're walking for, sort of who you're supporting. And looking forward to that. Hopefully get some good weather as I'll be strutting around the fine streets of Waukee, Iowa. Felt this was a really good podcast episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, please subscribe. You can like, you can comment, submit questions for future episodes on Twitter at Wild Joe Radio. Putting together a piece as we speak on the current under contract players, guys you may see in Iowa moving forward. Look for that on iowawild.com in the coming days. Other than that, I think that about does it. Again, appreciate Coach McLean for joining me. Get you another episode here shortly. Until then, stow those tray tables in an upright lock position. This podcast is coming in for a landing. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. It has been One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. Until the next episode, we'll see you.